This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
DC for you. DC for you. DC for you.
Welcome back to the only dedicated DC Comics podcast in all of Place to Be Nation. I am Russell.
I am Todd. And we are here this episode to tell you about a time. Come with us back to the early days of live-action superheroes. And no, we're not talking about the serials of the 1940s that you would see in the movie houses. Or are we talking the 70s era of The Incredible Hulk and Spider-Man or the 60s Batman? We're kind of talking about a thematic sequel to 60s Batman and Robin in The Legends of the Superheroes. This is a special that was produced in 1979 for NBC television by Hanna-Barbera, kind of loosely using the roster of the Super Friends and the Legion of Doom, the Super Friends villains, but with a couple of substitutions, characters that you would not necessarily see on the cartoon, but you would actually have, you know, characters from Legion of Superheroes thrown in here, kind of random choices. Russell, were you prepared for the levels of high drama and world-beating state, the level of stakes introduced here in the Legends of the Superheroes special? We're looking at the first one called the Challenge.
It was a two-parter.
Yes,
I don't think anything can fully prepare you for what you're going to see when you watch this. You just have to really experience it for yourself. But we're going to try and some of our experiences with it.
With it, yeah.
This actually speaks to the other side of this show, because we've told people in episode one that sometimes you're going to talk about the weird and the silly of DC Comics and of just DC lore. And I think this falls under that category.
Yeah, without question. This is goofy as S. You have kind of the unexpected team roster. You have no Superman to be found, right? You have Superman was busy being in Richard Donner movies at this point. So if we were going to introduce him in here, it would totally undermine what was going on in Superman the movie and Superman 2, which was soon to come out after this. So we didn't have Superman. We have in his place Captain Marvel / Shazam, who had been on CBS television, but not played by the same actor. Most of these characters were played by kind of no-name or TV journeymen or stunt people. But you did have Adam West as Batman, Burt Ward as Robin, and Frank Gorshin as the Riddler returning. So,
and Frank Gorshin steals this show for me.
He was fantastic. He had actual comic timing, and you could definitely tell he was like, I haven't had a gig this good in a while, because he overacts he's having a great time. You know, you got a feel for him, like, okay, he's all in on this.
You want to talk about somebody who can chew up some scenery.
They give them nothing to work with, and
he chews the hell out of the scenery in this episode, and it is wonderful, especially his scene with Captain Marvel when he is doing his Sigmund Freud impression. Oh, my God. That is something that just has to be seen to be believed. Watch that and then just, you know, prepare to laugh your ass off. It's so hilarious.
Yeah. He's kind of given the rank of second. He's like the vice president of these villains. He's the second most important one. He gives them all their statuses. He assigns them to their missions, but he's not in charge. He's not the the big bad. The big bad is a guy named Wardrew.
Yeah, that's that was something that threw me a little bit, because I was like, this is not a character that I normally associate with the Legion of Doom.
Yeah,
or
not at all.
Really, I'm not sure who's like villain he really is.
Yeah, he's a Legion of Superheroes villain.
So, okay.
And, you know, he's gone through a lot of changes, but they got the look dead on from what he was being presented as in the comics. You know, a guy who was drawn by artists like Dave Cockrum and Mike Grell.
Yeah.
So, you know, they got the look just right, but it's incongruous because he's not supposed to be of our time. You know, he's a wizard from the future, not of this earth, but why am I looking at this in a serious eye? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter
really at all. It really is like it's almost like a parody even of the 1966 Batman, which in itself feels like a parody at times.
Sure.
And you've got, of course, Adam West and Burt Ward returning, reprising their roles as Batman and Robin. Looking like they've definitely not really been prepared to play those characters ever again, especially not, you know, maybe 10 years after that show came to an end. certainly not in the same old shape. And I'm reasonably sure that in the intro, that ain't Burt Ward pulling off backflips.
No, the backflip over and over. And you can tell the hair is longer, too. I thought that at the first, like, oh, okay, Burt. No, that's definitely not Burt Ward. But
I was like, that's not him.
And you only see that hair length, that intro scene, and then later, you know, at the table, at the dais, you actually see Bert.
Yeah.
Not looking too different. You know, he's in his 30s here as the Boy Wonder.
Yeah, it's definitely not exactly superhero shape anymore. Now, we talked about Frank Gorshin being great. Another character, but who looked absolutely nothing like the character that I would have recognized was Charlie Kalas as Sinestro.
Sinestro, yeah.
This take on Sinestro was not something I was necessarily prepared for. It's not my Sinestro, but all the same, he threatens to steal the show a couple of times.
Yeah, he's outstanding. He's really funny. Does a lot of that. It's like the kind of guy you could see, oh yeah, this guy was on, he was a B player or a character actor on sitcoms for a million years. At least it feels like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I looked him up after and I was like, man, this guy's been working in the business for a long time. And how sad is it that he had to debase himself to be on this?
is work, man.
Yeah. But it was a paying gig. And he hammed it up something fierce. If you want a clear example of that, the scene when he's dressed as an old gypsy woman.
Yes. Sinestro in drag. Classic. You're not quite prepared to see Sinestro.
I was not prepared.
In fact, they put all of the villains in these silly costumes in disguise, you know, to stall the heroes from, I don't know, undoing the doomsday device.
But isn't that the craziest thing about this whole plot? Dr. Savannah, played pretty brilliantly, actually, by Howard Morris, cooks up this scheme that he's got a doomsday device, what they call the doomsday device, and what it's going to do is count down from an hour, how convenient, to killing every living thing on the planet, except for them.
Except for the bad guys.
So, yeah, except for the bad guys.
So, sorry, Giganta, I guess.
And the heroes have.
There's going to be only one lady left.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
That's right.
I think Giganta can take care of herself. She doesn't take no lip off Riddler at the beginning.
No. And apparently she was a gorilla. That's what her backstory was. Yeah. She was a gorilla transformed into a woman. But we'll get to her.
They're going with the Silver Age take on Giganta for sure. Which they're going for the Silver Age take on pretty much every one of these characters, I think. And but even sillier, if you can, you know, fathom this. But with Dr. Savannah's plan, Nobody knows about it except for the villains. The heroes have no idea, but they concoct this plan that, oh, we should go, we should tell the heroes about it and lead them on like a series of like really odd clues and quests in order to distract them. And I'm just sitting there like, does it not occur to anybody watching this or writing this that, you know, they could have just not said anything?
They could have not said anything and we'd be fine. Yeah. But
yeah. Your plan would have gone off without a hitch.
You have to have, you know, these villains have to have these personality flaws, and the Riddler has to do, you know, it's ridiculous and silly. And yet I have a strange affection for the whole darn thing.
I do too. It's hilarious. The only part of this that makes me like cringe, even in a not funny way, is when Hawkman is being introduced and he does his Hawkman cry or right. whatever that noise was.
Caw-caw.
That
I'm the Hawkman.
Oh, dear God. Although you touch on a good point about the personality flaws. But one of them almost has like a real moment of clarity when Riddler is like, this is my best work. This is my like true genius moment. But if that thing goes off, no one's going to be around to hear about it.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, that,
Riddler almost stumbles into
has to have the recognition.
And like Riddler almost stumbles into it. But I was like, yeah, you're there. You're there. You're gone. You lost it. But then he's right back to cackling again. But there's all sorts of like weird stuff that goes on in this one. But I think one other person I want to give credit to, maybe kind of an unsung character in this, is Solomon Grundy, played by Mickey Morton. You want to talk about somebody who really committed to their character? He was playing a version of Solomon Grundy that I kind of recognized.
Yeah, he was kind of like something out of the Addams Family or the Munsters, the way the character was written and acted.
The whole deal of him like putting on that disguise to work at a gas station.
Well, and that was one of the only legitimate laughs. Everything had a laugh track, so things that they thought were funny or just natural pauses, they would put the fake canned laughter after. When they said, you know, they had him put his costume on, but people recognize me as Grundy. He said, well, put the hat on. And you know, they act like the hat is going to change everything. And that was actually really funny to me.
There are legit laughs in this. And then there are like, you know, plenty, I think, of unintentional laughs. I remember whenever Batman has gotten the news about, you know, oh, the villains are on the loose and they're going to do this thing, so we all have to go split up.
Superheroes disperse.
That was great. You have the ones that can fly seeming like take off, but you have Green Lantern there, and I'm like, okay, well, Green Lantern can fly, right? Well, no.
He teleports.
He just stops and he points his ring at himself and it goes off. And the first time I watched this, I was like, did he just commit suicide?
Yeah. He just greened out. No, he apparated. That was a Harry Potter type thing where he just kind of, that's not how the Green Lantern ring works. We didn't get the oath, you know, although this has got to be go ahead.
You do get the oath. You get the original version of the oath when he takes on Sinestro. And you get one of the most hilarious things I've ever seen whenever he blasts Sinestro with his power ring and you can see the cord pull the actor backwards so hard that he flips, like he does like a couple of backflips into a tree.
Well, and this is the kind of thing that was shot on videotape back then. It's actually held up pretty well. So if you're watching on the app, which you probably should watch on the app if you have it, it's probably on YouTube as well, or excerpts on YouTube. But the video quality in the app is ridiculously clear for something that's over 40 years old.
It really is. It's amazing that this held up. This is one of those hidden gems, I think, on the DC Universe app that it was one of the very first things they put up.
Yep.
I'd never even heard of it. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, this is comedic gold. You just have to sit here and watch this. Now, it is the late 70s, so the female characters don't really get all that much to do. They just kind of show up, say their lines, and we move on. So you've got Black Canary, you've got Huntress, and you've got, as we previously mentioned, Giganta, but they don't really do anything.
No.
All that much. And that's, I guess that's, you know, a testament to where we were at the time. Although the weird Black Canary cry power just kind of tripped me out.
So yeah, I'll give them that one. Like a master of all sonic frequencies, the way they introduced the character. Special effects are what they are. I'm just gonna say they did the best they could with what they had. They probably didn't have a ton of money to put this on, even though this was aired in prime time in 1979 on NBC, I believe. And pretty amazing that this showed up, taking up 1 hour of time. Never rerun, as I understand. Just kind of
that's existed. Unfortunate.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing that could have been syndicated and let the legend grow. I mean, you get your characters out there, but when video DVDs came out and Warner Archives started offering this about 5 years ago, people finally got a chance to see it and go, okay, my memory is not on crack. This was a thing that really happened.
Yes, this actually exists. This is a real thing. And now I've talked about like some of my favorite moments of the funniest stuff that I was enjoying. What stuck out to you? Was there something in there that just like had you cackling?
Well, as retired man myself, as a person who is retired man, I have to say that was kind of funny. It was kind of unexpected because the way I remembered it, that was part of the roast. But that's somebody else we'll talk about when we see the roast, which is the second episode. But retired man, who is kind of a original character named the Scarlet Cyclone.
Gee, I wonder what name they're playing off of there.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think
Red.
Red Tornado. Like it made me think that maybe that tornadic effect they created for the Flash was actually for Red Tornado. But then they discovered that they would actually have to build a robotic suit that someone could walk around in, and figured, nah, we don't want to put in that much effort. So what do we do with this effect? Oh, we can get a Flash costume pretty easy. And
pretty much all of the DC heroes are portrayed as robots, with the exception of Batman and Robin. You know, they're all kind of flat personalities anyway.
They really are. There's not much to any of them. And I mean, speaking of characters who have absolutely nothing to do, the Flash, he does nothing in this entire series or in this entire episode. But I will give Jeff Altman, who played Weather Wizard, a little bit of credit. Whenever he puts on the used car salesman shtick
with Volkswagens,
with Volkswagen, that scene was actually funny. Even though whenever he's as Weather Wizard, it's not really that great. He's just kind of there. But that used car salesman bit, that was actually pretty good. I'll give him credit there.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because it does hit this formula where they all have to take on these disguises to stall the characters. And so it's again, I treat this as though it's a comedy parody. Not too different from say the spirit of a show like Powerless years later, you know, playing the DC universe for laughs. But this is the 70s. The laughs are a little bit different and less ironic.
So. They are. But as that piece of media, what do you think? Like, I know you said you didn't actually see this when it aired.
Something I heard about a few years later, and then saw some clips when YouTube became a thing, and then was I'm just happy that it exists on DC Universe. I said it right.
He got it right, lady. Let the record show it didn't take long. Now, what did you think? What do you think 7-year-old Todd would have thought of this?
This is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Well, I don't know. It's a good question because I was all about, you know, characters like Green Lantern and Flash when they would make special appearances on Super Friends. But there's no Aquaman. There's no Wonder Woman. There's, you know, with the exception of Batman and Robin, there's none of my core Super Friends heroes to get into. But I probably still would have been very excited about it as a 7-year-old. I don't think I was yet cynical comic book guy at that point. So I probably would have liked both of these and enjoyed the humorous aspects of it. I wasn't quite ready for the 89 Batman and the seriousness of DC, although Wonder Woman and Superman were both played very straight at the time.
Yeah. This is something that I think as a kid, I probably would have been right. I would have been like just hyped for this because I remember as a kid when I was introduced to that Batman 66 show, of course, in syndication, I absolutely loved it. And as like, 6-7-year-old me would have said, man, this is high drama. You know, this is some crazy stuff. I've got to keep watching this. I'm very invested in this this story and these characters. But, I think I appreciate this a little bit more watching it as an adult because it's pretty clear that most of these actors are just having a ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Gorshin and Charlie Callis and, Adam West is a guy who said he regretted doing this show later in time, just said it was too cheaply done. But you know what? He's pretty consistent with his performance. Compared to Batman,
I was gonna say he felt like it was like he picked it up like he had never left. Like he just goes right, he slips right back into being Batman or being that take on the character. And the same with Burt Ward. Burt Ward really hammed it up as Robin, and is the only one in the ending fight scene. I don't know if you caught this, but he's the only one that really throws anything that looks like a legitimate hit when he does like this jumping punch thing. And I was like, did he actually hit somebody in the face just now? He's like, you're going to sell for me, damn it.
Yeah. Burt Ward is a fan of Roman Reigns, I suppose.
Yeah. He goes for the Superman punch and delivers what was the only convincing moment of action in this whole exercise, but it was still, it's still pretty funny, and I know that, we mentioned Mordrew earlier, but I would actually say that he was pretty good, too. He played that character up, hammed it more than a little bit, but Gabriel Dell did a pretty good job, all things considered, even though he feels a little out of place amongst the rest of the villains.
Yeah, he was commanding enough to be the big bad and be in charge. I don't think I have a problem with most of the performances. I think it's just on the hero side, some of them just felt very one-dimensional. And that's what it is. You're getting the first live-action appearance of the Flash, of Green Lantern, of Black Canary.
It was, wasn't it?
And the Huntress. The Huntress had just been created 2 years or so before. All-Star Comics. I think it was All-Star Comics as, Earth 2. They didn't even give us an explanation why she was here with the lead. What would they call the assembled heroes? They didn't call them the Justice League. They didn't call them the Super Friends. They were just the, Batman. I feel like he referred to them as a group, an official group, but I don't remember the name of it.
I don't remember them ever actually having a name. That was something that they didn't really get into. It was more or less just, here's this group of heroes who are all, for some reason, hanging out together. We also don't really get much of an explanation. No. Well, it was to celebrate Scarlet Cyclone's
retirement. Yeah.
And then Batman gets a fax.
the alert went off that Riddler was planting clues, and we've got to we have the sledgehammer of plot. But for what it is, it's worth people, especially if you have the app, to seek out and watch and take it for what it is. A snapshot of 1979. I recently have been rereading the New Teen Titans from about a year that came after that, and the characterization of Robin is a little bit different in Wolfman and Perez's New Teen Titans compared to what Hanna-Barbera's Robin was being presented as here.
Oh, for sure. The whole Hanna-Barbera doing DC characters thing is that's actually something that I think we'll probably get into in later episodes. But But this was a fun. This was a fun rewatch. I'm glad that we decided to do this one so early on because it was just a lot of fun to get into. Yeah. And I would highly encourage anybody to go and check this one out. Go in ready to laugh because that's what it's there for. To me, I think that that's what its intended purpose is. Just go in ready to sit back, watch some pure cheese, and laugh hysterically. And would love to hear what you guys think about this one after you check it out. You can come to the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook group, find the link for this episode, tell us what you thought of it, tweet us at PTBN Comics, and of course come back next time for another episode of DC For You, where we will continue exploring why DC Comics really does have something for everyone, and I'm sure that this will find an audience if you go and check it out. But with that, for Todd Weber, I'm Russell Sellers. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
DC For You.
Hey, folks, thanks again for listening to another episode of DC For You. But before you leave, I got to tell you about some of the other really great shows happening here at Place to Be Nation. Over on the PTBN Pop Feed, we've got the newest episode of Marvel Age, where I, along with the rest of the Sarcastic Four, dive into 1971 with the first of three parts. Oh, my, covering that year. And the eighth episode of Laugh In Theater, Andy has welcomed on hard-traveling fanboy Greg Phillips to watch one of the funniest movies of all time, Austin Powers: International Man of Mystery. Speaking of the hard-traveling fanboys, they continue X-Month, or X-Men Month, if you will, with a review of the newest X film, Dark Phoenix. Did they say love it as much as the critics? And Jennifer Smith is back with a new episode of Freak Out Drive-In as she welcomes returning guest Scott Criscolo to watch that 2016 clown horror movie. No, not it. Terrifier. And on a new episode of the NBA team, Adam Murray and Andrew Reich are here to reflect on what has been quite the last week in NBA land. And on a brand new PTBN Pop special, Andy Atherton, Scott Criscolo, J. Arsenio D'Amato and Todd Weber get together to discuss PTBN's greatest song of the 80s tournament, which, as you have heard by now, is rebooting on June 23rd. There will be six polls a day posted for round one. You can get in on the action on Facebook by searching PTBN's greatest song of the 80s tournament and liking the page. Make sure you weigh in on this. It's going to be fun stuff. No Russian bot interference this time, hopefully. And over on the wrestling feed, the newest episode of Main Event, Scott, Nate, and Steve recap New Japan's Dominion, and they look ahead to the G1 climax and then discuss AEW's TV deal with Turner. On the Place to Be podcast, Justin Scott and Steve Bennett are back inside the home office for a dive into the September 30th, 89 Madison Square Garden house show. And after a six-month hiatus, Steve Bennett and Peter Winson reunite to discuss their 10 favorite single-season sports teams of all time on the Adams Division podcast. And in the ninth episode of Row 1, Seat 1, Ben welcomes action wrestling champion AC Mack to the podcast. And on PlaceToBeNation.com, PTBN's tribute to 1994 kicks off with a commentary on the Best Picture nominees for the 66th Academy Awards and continues with a piece on the 94 World Cup. So, you know, make sure you also check out our social media pages and message board at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever, the best pay-per-view and TV matches ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. And thanks again for listening to DC For You. We will see you again next week.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. The Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.